This is an election news special from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, broadcasting live from the new museum in Washington, D.C., in the Knight Studios. Today, we're looking ahead to voting patterns and demographics in the presidential campaign. And still with us is NPR's political editor, Ken Rudin. And Ken, as you look at these results from exit polls, not just from Indiana and North Carolina, but throughout this Democratic presidential campaign, what jumps out at you? I mean, is it still the inability of Barack Obama to win over white working class voters? Is it still the ability of Hillary Clinton to command elderly voters? Is it still the ability of Barack Obama to command such incredible loyalty amongst African Americans?
Well, it's hard to make the case that, if Barack Obama were not in the race, would Hillary Clinton not get the African-American support? I assume she would. If Hillary Clinton were not in the race, would he not get the blue-collar, lower-income workers? I suggest he would. So I think the fact that they're running against each other, obviously Barack Obama has this loyalty among African-Americans, but I think it's more earned than reflexive, because if you look at 2007, there were a lot of African-American politicians and voters indicated they would support Hillary Clinton, not knowing Barack Obama would have that appeal, as he turned out to have.
We got a caller on this point. Let's talk with Mary. Mary calling us from Philadelphia.
Hello?
Hi, Mary. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Talking about what would I say to a superdelegate, one comment I'd make is just roughly what was said. Everybody says that Barack cannot win the big states, but if he didn't have a white woman to run against, he might well, and he's had a lot of crossover appeal. But I think the second thing that really speaks to me is that there's a tremendous support among senior citizens for Hillary Clinton. There's a terrific support among young people for Barack Obama. If I were thinking about the future of the party, everybody is important, but unless we reach out and draw in lots of the next generation, the future of the party is going to be more dismal. And so if you're going with who speaks the most to whom, I would strongly support Obama. I also just want to say quickly that the Clintons have had a strong legacy of working for racial justice over all their lives. I hate to see them tarnish their image with African Americans at this stage by appearing to be spoilers in this race, given where it has gone. I guess that's it. Thank you.
Okay, Mary. Thanks very much for the call. And she's certainly right. Voters over the age of 65, heavily for Hillary Clinton. Voters under the age of, I think, 35, heavily for Barack Obama.
Right. And we've never even talked about a youth vote before, because we've always said that young people do not vote. They do this time. Barack Obama did bring out young voters in record numbers. I think every Democratic state that had a caucus or a primary had record numbers. But at the same time, Hillary Clinton did get the over 65, less educated and lower income, but certainly the older vote, I guess perhaps less trustful of somebody, Barack Obama, who's only been in the Senate for 3 years.
Let's bring some other voices into this conversation. Joining us now is Ron Walters, a professor of government and politics at the University of Maryland at College Park. And nice to have you back with us.
Good to be with you.
And David Bosaitis, who's a senior research associate at the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies. Nice to have you with us here at the museum.
Thank you.
And I wanted to ask you both, you study these kinds of results for a living. You've done it for many years. As you look at the results of the demographics of who's voted for who and why, what jumps out to you two?
Go ahead.
Ron Walters deferring for a moment.
I see a classic split that is reminiscent of the candidacies, most particularly of Gary Hart, where the Democratic Party is divided between its more educated and higher income and more refined-minded supporters and the working class. Historically, the black vote has gone with the white working class, and this is really the first election where the black vote has aligned itself with the more upscale elements and reform elements in the Democratic Party, and this is the first time that that reform candidate is going to win.
Ron Walters?
Yes. What I think really hits me is this discussion about the working class and the reasons why it will or won't vote for either Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. And what's in the back of my mind is the prospect of whether or not in this election cycle the Democratic Party can win with as few as 40% of that group. Barack Obama has been trending in that direction, in the Deep South, 25%, very recently in both of these, 38 and 40%.
In Indiana and North Carolina.
That's
yeah.
right. Yeah. If that remains true or somewhere in there, I'm wondering whether or not the fact that he picks up independence to a certain extent, he won independence in Indiana this time around, could make up for a portion of that particular group. So that's a sort of a calculus that that's in my mind right now.
David Basaitis, you talked about that uncanny split, yet is there a new and powerful part of the Democratic coalition that we didn't see 20 years ago when Gary Hart was running, and that is that youth vote, which may be reliable this time around?
I think that there is. Rui Teixeira of the Century Fund wrote a paper with Alan Abribovitz about what they called the emerging mass upper middle class. And the demographics of the country are changing. It's no longer a country dominated by uneducated, unionized workers. And that demographic change has shifted the politics in the United States. And Obama's candidacy has tapped into that emerging upper middle class, especially given that it in the Democratic Party now, it's aligned strongly with African Americans, and that is a majority in the Democratic Party.
Here's an email question that we have from Pat in Belleville, Illinois. I believe that Obama, the son of an immigrant, the product of a mixed marriage, can have a powerful message for Hispanics. If you were running his campaign, how would you craft a message for Hispanic voters? And Ron Walters, another group which Senator Obama has had difficulty reaching.
Well, yes, that's true. And he has tried, I think, his best, although there's not been much discussion of it in this campaign, but in his role as a member of the Senate to deal with a comprehensive immigration policy. And it was interesting to me that when he ran in California that that didn't play all that well because it was neutralized to a great extent by Hillary Clinton's, you know, parroting pretty much the same thing. So I think he's got to find a deeper level of connection with the Hispanic community that really, I think, is the same in some respects as that with the working class whites, which is to say that if you look at the exit polling in these elections that just happened, she beats Barack Obama on her handling of the economy. And I think that that's the route into this community. And I think if he does a good job on that in the fall, I think he will be able to attract many more Hispanics.
Let's see if we get a question from the audience here at the museum.
I'm Callie Crossley. I'm interested in the lens through which some analysis is being offered. When Barack Obama does not attract large numbers of whites, he's criticized or as considered a negative. And yet on the flip side, if Senator Clinton does not attract lots of people of color, including African Americans, it doesn't seem to go in the negative column for her. And I'm interested to know why is that in terms of the analysis.
Ken, what do you think? Or David Basaitis, I think.
Actually, if I were to pose that question, I would say Hillary Clinton does not do well with men. And why is it that Barack Obama is not doing well with white working? The emphasis in the media is why isn't Barack Obama doing well with white working class voters? And much less of an emphasis on why is Hillary Clinton doing so poorly with men?
Well, but to go back to this point about why isn't she doing so well with African Americans, I think it was 91 and 92% in these elections that just took place. It's up there primarily because of the feeling on the part of African Americans that the Clinton campaign sort of rolled out a race card, a huge one. Ever since New Hampshire, the description of Barack Obama's victory there is one that could be compared to Jesse Jackson and Hillary Clinton talking about the fact that Martin Luther King Jr. Needed Lyndon Johnson to get things through. A president, after all, has to do these things. And then, of course, her surrogates, Geraldine Ferraro in particular, talking about the fact that, well, he wouldn't be where he is without the fact if he was black. Well, and on and on. I think you get the point. This was tremendously, I think, not well received by African Americans. And they didn't expect it coming from the Clintons. And so I think there's not just a question of anger here. There's a feeling of being let down by a couple that they really revered. And so to that extent, this action on the part of the Clinton campaign really drove, I think, African Americans into the arms of Barack Obama at a time when he was not well known.
No, I'm understanding why this happened. What I'm puzzled by is the analysis. If she does not attract persons of color, it's not considered negative in the analysis politically. If he does not attract large numbers of whites, it is considered negative. I was just curious about the analysis.
I think maybe one of the reasons is that no matter who the nominee is, the African American community will go support the Democratic nominee, perhaps 90%, as they did Al Gore, John Kerry, 2000-2004. I think that's a given. I think what will ultimately determine the election is this blue collar support, the so-called Reagan Democrats that Ronald Reagan won from in 1980-1984, wooing away the working class workers from the Democratic Party. Democrats obviously need to get that back. But by saying that, it sounds like what the Democratic Party cannot do is take the African-American vote for granted. Even if it'll be 90% for no matter who the nominee is, if it's a suppressed black turnout, if black voters feel like, you know, they lost the nomination unfairly or by, you know, fooling around with the rules, any kind of sitting home in November could hurt the party in November.
Ken, let me just – I think I understand the question. And I think that what you're really asking is whether or not the media has a racial screen.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what she's asking. Is that what you're asking?
That's what I'm asking.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much for the question and for the clarification. We're talking with Ron Walters of the University of Maryland at College Park and David Basaitis, the Senior Research Associate at the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies, and also with us NPR political editor Ken Rudin. You're listening to an NPR election news special. And let's get Joe on the line, and Joe's calling us from Louisville in Kentucky.
That's right. I consider myself an independent good old boy from Kentucky. Louisville's kind of separated from the rest of the state. You know, they consider us a little more liberal in this part. The rest of the state is pretty much conservative with Mitch McConnell, Jim Bunning, and some of those guys representing us. The question I have, or the statement, or the response, I'm just thinking that when I call them the plantation-owning Swift voters, get a hold of Barack Obama in the general election, I'm really afraid of what's going to happen if he's a Democratic candidate. I respect the man. I think he's going to do an excellent job if he wins the primary. But one of the things that I think they're going to attack him with, and it's just going to be a slew of it, is things like reparations for slavery. And since he's done 90% of the black vote, I'm wondering if there's going to be something back there that black people are going to say, he owes us, he needs to at least take a look at this. And here in Kentucky, and I'm afraid in a lot of areas outside of Kentucky, that's going to be a non-starter with a lot of the white voters. And I'd like to find out if any of your guests have any kind of comment on that.
Ron Walters?
Yes. Having just published a book last month called The Price of Racial Reconciliation, I was interested to know whether or not Barack Obama believed in reparations, and it turns out that he doesn't.
I'd like to add something to that.
David Basaitis, go ahead.
All of this discussion of Swift voting, it supposedly already was tried in the Louisiana House election last week. It was ineffective. I personally am not especially concerned about what will happen in the fall election because, not to be too contrarian, but this isn't going to be an election that's a referendum on George Bush. And I think when Barack Obama gets the nomination, he is going to be a prohibitive favorite to win because not only how the country feels about George Bush, but the economic conditions in the country, the unpopular war in Iraq, that is going to be more than John McCain can carry. And actually, the real question in my mind is whether this is going to be a modest victory for Barack Obama or whether it's going to be more comparable to a blowout like in 1980 when the politics of the country substantially changed.
I kind of disagree, only because I think you can't underestimate the kind of tactics that are used in campaigns. You would think in 1988, for example, it would be a referendum on the 8 years of Ronald Reagan and what George Bush would do as president, but we focus a lot about Pledge of Allegiances, things like that, the so-called swift voting of Michael Dukakis in 1988. We focused during the debates in 2000 whether Al Gore sighed or not during the debates. I mean, the media plays a lot of role, a big role in this, but a lot of times there are trivial issues that we elitists can say, you know, the American people are smarter than that, but ultimately they could play a significant role in November.
I disagree, because in 1988 the country was in a relatively good condition. There was a stock market crash in 87, but it had largely been corrected by 88. Things were going reasonably well. Things were going very well in 2000. The country is in a real crisis right now, and this is comparable to, if you remember back to 1980, there was high inflation, the economy was doing poorly, American jobs were going overseas, and then there was the Iran hostage crisis. This is a situation where the country is in crisis, and I don't believe the tactics are going to work when there's a crisis. When you have reasonable economic and political conditions, yes.
Here's an email question from Chet Farley in Palatine, Illinois. Back to the previous woman's questions. Why doesn't the news analyze race fairly? Another aspect is how your exit polls always point to working class, college educated, no college education, men, women, etc. But all these point to white people. Why is the African American vote always lumped into one demographic as if being black is the only thing that sets them apart? Ron Walters, what do you think?
Well, it isn't the only thing that sets African Americans apart, because there is a fairly substantial class divide in the black community. But the amazing thing to me, and also youth divide, but the amazing thing to me is that there is relative uniformity when it comes to exercising the vote. There was a lot made in some of the public opinion polling, not the least of which was David's own poll about the coming youth vote and the way in which that could change, because African Americans, in terms of their party identification, were becoming more independent. But when faced with the real world and the challenges that they faced as African Americans, they tended to vote substantially like their elders. We're seeing that again in this election, where if you look at the Harvard studies of youth, their issues almost exactly look like their elders.
I'm sorry we sprang that on you with so little time left in the program. We'll address these issues in future programs. But Ron Walters and David Basaitis, thank you both for being with us here today at the museum. As always, our political editor, Ken Rudin, thanks to you, too. I'm Neil Conan. You've been listening to an NPR Election News Special.